from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, shutdown drama, reprieve, lessons learned, transit strike in San Francisco, a Medal of Honor, and fast food employees on food stamps. Tea Party readiness to shut down the government, even risk default to defund Obamacare, turned back at the 11th hour. Republican Senator John McCain called the whole odyssey shameful.
We are now seeing the end of this agonizing odyssey that this body has been put through, but far more importantly, the American people have been put through.
House Minority Leader Democrat Nancy Pelosi was hoping for lessons learned.
This really was unnecessary. It's unfortunate that it happened. Hopefully there are lessons learned.
And a long-awaited Medal of Honor has gone to former Army Captain William Swenson for his bravery in a 7-hour firefight in Afghanistan. At one point on that long day, he hauled a badly wounded fellow soldier onto a medevac helicopter and was caught on film kissing him goodbye on the head.
I wanted him to know that it was going to be okay. And I wanted him to know that he had done his job. But it was time for him to go.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Kristen Welker of NBC News, Bob Cusack of The Hill, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What have we just been through with shutdown and the edge of default? What have we learned and what now? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining us now from Washington, Kristen Welker, White House correspondent for NBC News. Kristen, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for having me back.
Great to have you here. And from Washington, Bob Cusack, managing editor of The Hill, the daily paper written for and about Congress. Bob, welcome back to you as well.
Hey, Tom.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Bob, and Kristen.
Bob, give us the talk of the Hill. I mean, what are people saying on Capitol Hill at the end of this week? Give us a sense of the different strains of, we know what they're saying publicly, but what's the chatter there after all this?
Well, the chatter is what next? This was a complete debacle. People on Capitol Hill, Democrats and Republicans, were on edge over last month. They couldn't get any kind of deal. The Tea Party really forcing the hand of GOP leaders. Ted Cruz leading the charge. And, you know, this could really kick the can until early next year. Now, the big difference is that we did have a shutdown. They don't happen very often. The last one before this one was 17 years ago. So we talked to Senator Mitch McConnell, and he said, this is not going to happen again. President Obama also indicated that. The Obamacare fight, as far as defunding or delaying Obamacare as part of the fiscal battle, it's over. Republicans know they lost. Republican leaders never wanted to go along with the strategy, but their hand was forced.
But even in the process of this 16 days, the focus began to shift from Obamacare, though that was still there, to debt and deficit. I mean, we have a government shutdown put off, but the issues come back on January 15th. Default issues come back on February 7th. Are you saying that Republicans, Tea Party included, are now not going to go back to those weapons?
Well, I think some definitely in the Tea Party are going to continue this fight. There's no doubt about it. But it will require Republicans in Congress, and I think most Republicans in Congress are ready to move on from the Obamacare fight. And as you said, they were moving on. They were moving, pivoting to spending reforms, which they hadn't been talking about really since the last fight in 2011 over the debt limit. So they want to exchange. Basically, the deal making now is possibly easing the sequester. That's what Republicans would be willing to give Democrats. But they want some entitlement reform. Democrats, however, they want some tax revenue. And Republicans are absolutely insistent that they're not going to give any more tax revenue. So there's not a lot of optimism that there's going to be any kind of so-called grand bargain on taxes and spending anytime soon.
Kristen Welker at the White House, does the Obama administration feel that it has succeeded in making the point that it will not negotiate around shutdown and default? Or do they expect that those tools could be rolled right back out for leverage in a couple of months?
Well, look, I think both statements are true to some degree. I think they feel as though the president dug in his heels without using the word winning. He did manage to stand his ground in this latest fight, and Democrats emerged unified. And remember, they've criticized President Obama in the past for not standing his ground. So the fact that he did in this case, I think, emboldens him. Having said that, they're preparing for the fact that some Republicans are going to want to fight some of these old battles again. But I think they are focused right now on getting, if not a grand bargain, at the very least scaling back those sequester cuts, which you just talked about, and really trying to put something on the table that can get through both chambers. That is going to be the challenge moving forward. Now, I can tell you that all sides are also saying that they think House Speaker John Boehner, in a way, has been emboldened within his own party. You hear some members of his own party, Michelle Bachmann, saying he really fought the good fight. Could that help Republicans when they circle back to these budget battles in just a few months? Possibly. We'll have to wait and see. But certainly, I think that Democrats feel as though President Obama stood his ground, made the point that he's not going to give an inch when it comes to health care, his signature piece of legislation.
Bob, if John Boehner is emboldened, and we see that being reported on any number of fronts here within the GOP, emboldened for or toward what? Emboldened to represent the Tea Party again next time out, or emboldened to represent the moderate Republicans who were very unhappy with the Tea Party this time?
Yeah, it's a tough spot for Boehner. He's got the toughest job in Washington, and it's like herding cats with some of these guys in the House Republican conferences. That I think that Boehner's going to be asking for a lot less. There's no doubt about it. Where he goes from here, it remains to be seen. Every time that they try to get more leverage by passing a bill that would help them in the negotiations with the Senate, they've had to pull the bill. And we saw that was basically the grand finale of this. So, you know, I think Boehner comes out of this very weakened, and where he goes from now is going to be very telling. But
what do you mean when you say he'll be asking for less? Of whom? Well, about what? On what?
Well, as far as what, I mean, a lot of Democrats were saying that, what do you want out of this? Because obviously Obamacare and the defunding and the delay of Obamacare, that was a non-starter for the president and the Democratic-led Senate. So Democrats were like, what do you want? Do you want Keystone? They kind of were asking for different things in different bills. So I think Republicans have to come up with a unified game plan. There's no doubt about it. Democrats are very united right now. That can change. But Republicans have to say, what do they want out of these budget negotiations that are going to happen over the next several months between the primary person on the Republican side now is Paul Ryan, the Budget Committee chairman, who may run for president. He may be the next Ways and Means chairman. He's got a lot of options. Now, Paul Ryan, I think Boehner's going to defer to Ryan on a lot of these tough fiscal discussions.
Jack, I want to hear from you what you think we've learned in this week, but let's listen to a little of the sound out of the week. This was on the Senate floor on Wednesday as everything turned against the Tea Party line, but Utah Republican Senator Mike Lee, who had raised it strongly, defended the role of Tea Partiers in this whole battle.
Some say we shouldn't have fought because we couldn't win. But this country wasn't built by fighting only when victory was absolutely certain.
So keep on keeping on. His buddy Ted Cruz called it a victory. What's happened in the last couple of weeks? Nancy Pelosi here again calling it a temper tantrum, pointing to the cost of it.
Was their temper tantrum worth $24 billion? I don't think so. Perhaps they didn't know how costly it would be.
South Carolina Republican Senator Lindsey Graham telling CNN the whole strategy of the Tea Party here was not effective. Lindsey Graham.
Number one, the debt wasn't affected at all. Obamacare wasn't changed in any real measure. Our numbers went down. And if you think those polls are wrong, you're kidding yourself.
You're kidding yourself, he says, if you think the GOP down poll numbers are wrong. And finally, here's New York Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer giving thanks to Mitch McConnell for his role in the final Senate solution.
Leader McConnell stepped up for the good of the nation. It showed courage. He deserves our thanks as well.
A little glimmer of comedy there. Jack Beatty, what are you taking from the whole spectacle of what we've seen in October?
Well, you know, tactically, short term, in the battle for the headlines, the resolution of this debacle certainly looks like a Tea Party defeat. But strategically, in the medium and long term, in the battle for public confidence institutions, it could prove a Tea Party victory. You know, in off-year elections, the president's party rises or falls on the incumbent's personal popularity and the state of the economy. The Tea Party shutdown is almost certain to damage both. The president has already lost 8 points since January. He had a fillip of gain last week, but that was Democrats coming home to him. And the economy, I mean, almost certainly it'll be weaker now in next November than it is currently because of the shutdown. If this is defeat, I really hate to see what victory looks like.
Well, you're saying the president with his win, he doesn't call it that, but the Obamacare still stands, that his win is a political loss, that all this ends up a net political plus for the GOP, Jack?
I'm saying there's a real possibility of that. If the two factors that matter in off-year elections are president's popularity and the economy has been hurt, and I think that when all the smoke, you know, the dust falls on this, we'll see that the president has been hurt. It's just like a kind of mud wrestling, and people, and it happened the last time, it could happen this time. Democrats are saying he won. It could prove a Pyrrhic victory.
Bob Cusick, do you see that? A political reward for burning the village in order to save it?
Yeah, no, I do. I think that the problem for the president is that, I mean, you look at his track record right here, is that he hasn't gotten a lot done. So without a doubt, he won this. Obamacare was not touched. But at the same time, he's got to get immigration reform done. And the clock is ticking because it's got to get done this year. It's not going to happen in an election year.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news, shutdown drama and reprieve, lessons learned, transit strike in San Francisco, a Medal of Honor, McDonald's, fast food employees on food stamps in the news this week. Kristen Welker is with us from NBC News, Bob Cusack from The Hill, our own Jack Beatty is here. Let's hear from a couple of listeners. Nashville, Carl, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just a real quick comment about Tea Party's obsession with Obamacare and voting it against it 42 times and all this they just went through. One definition I've heard of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results.
Yes, we've heard that, but do you think we're going to go back into the same kind of headlock again, Carl, or are we done with this?
I hope we're done, but I just see them being so obsessive that they just will not give up on it. I don't know. I hate to say it, but I think we'll be back in it. I really do.
It'll be interesting to see who listens to them within the GOP this time. Carl, thanks for your call. Buffalo, New York. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. I listened to a lot of NPR this past week, and I have to say, you know, I've been hearing a lot of, you know, the Republicans this, the president that, and it was so-and-so's fault and holding everyone hostage. But the thing is that we're not, you know, the president saying, I won't negotiate, I won't meet, is not working a democracy. And at the same time, you know, holding something hostage is not working a democracy. But, you know, one of the things that I think that's happened from this that I'm happy is that people are actually bringing issues to the forefront that no matter what, we have to face. Because if you think shutting down parks and government workers being furloughed for 2 weeks is bad, if we don't at least put attention on some of these things, it's going to get much, much worse. You know, I didn't get out of my own credit card debt by continually, you know, just spending in the same way that I had been on the same things. It's
Chris, we've got it. I appreciate your call very much. I mean, it's interesting there, Kristen Welker. You know, there are so many views on how people look at this. There's Chris, who's glad to have things put on the table, even if she isn't happy about the way it was done. We've got others online here saying, we've got to get on top of this. You know, this sort of constant state of near crisis infects the body and brings down the health over time.
Right. Well, I think that's right, Tom. I think that the American people feel like they were losers in all of this. And if you look at the figures, the S&P said that the shutdown resulted in $24 billion of lost economic output. And then you just heard the woman there talk about the fact that workers were furloughed for 2 weeks. I interviewed a lot of those workers. They were angry. A lot of them had to take on second jobs to make ends meet. I want to just pivot to one other point, though, which you bring up, which is the Tea Party and whether or not they, in a way, could ultimately benefit from this. The irony of all of this this, is that they were going after health care. And of course, the Obama administration had this very rocky rollout of health care, and the Tea Party didn't really focus on it because they were so focused on defunding mm-hmm. the president's health care law. And when you talk about the president's second term agenda and what's possible in immigration, there is no doubt that these problems with health care are going to continue to serve as a roadblock in many ways. You have emails going out from Republicans now trying to refocus on the rocky rollout. And by the way, I should say one administration official says that they are working 24/7 to try to fix those problems. But certainly that's going to be a major roadblock moving forward.
Kristen, one of the notions that got a lot of work out there in conservative circles especially was the one that Chris in Buffalo brings up. The president wouldn't negotiate. That's not the mm-hmm. way to do democracy. How does the White House feel about the its messaging on that front and whether people understood its point in not talking in this circumstance?
I think it's a great point. A lot of people were scratching their heads. Why isn't the president negotiating? In my conversations with senior administration officials, they acknowledged that that was a difficult strategy. Their argument would be, we're not going to negotiate over a short-term deal to reopen the government, essentially. That's not the way things are done, to negotiate over a major piece of legislation to reopen the government for a couple of months. But the president said he will negotiate once the government's back open. And that is what he said yesterday. He said, look, I'm willing to come to the table. I'm willing to put everything on the table, whether it be entitlement reform or potentially look at some potential changes to the health care law. I do think the administration's message got muddled to some extent, sort of when we were in the thick of that battle with people saying, why won't the president come to the table? So the administration knew that they had to sort of clarify that point. They were bolstered by the fact that when they looked at the polls, a majority of Americans seemed to be blaming Republicans for the shutdown. So I think that most people did seem to understand what the president was saying, but it's certainly a tricky message, especially given the length of the shutdown that just occurred.
Let's go to Carrie in Montpelier, Vermont. Carrie, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
Yeah.
I just want to say that I am so thrilled and also not surprised that it was women senators who got the ball rolling on these negotiations. It just shows that women are excellent negotiators and that there should be many, many more of them in Congress.
Bring on the ladies. Bring on the women. Bob Cusack, how about it? There were some female senators playing a very front and center role in bringing this to a conclusion.
Absolutely. We did a rundown of the winners and losers of this ugly fight. And definitely one of the winners is the female lawmakers, including a centrist Senator Susan Collins. She has very good relationships with a number of female senators, as do all the senators who are women. And that includes Amy Klobuchar, a Democrat from Minnesota, Lisa Murkowski, Republican from Alaska. They put together a proposal. Now, it didn't catch fire. It wasn't the one that President Obama signed into law, but it moved the dialogue away from defunding Obamacare. And I think that's a dynamic to watch. Bipartisan group of female senators in the upper chamber. What is their next move? There is no doubt about it that they got a lot of kudos and they deserved it.
Describe for us just how crazy the mood on Capitol Hill got, Bob. You know it so well. I mean, there was even this moment that I didn't get much attention, but when a stenographer on the floor of the House kind of snapped and lost it and took to a microphone and began screaming, do yeah. not be deceived, God shall not be mocked, the House divided cannot stand. I mean, was that just an indicator of how weird things were getting?
Yeah, everybody was very, very stressed out, and the stenographer was working very long hours, and mm-hmm. Her husband described it to the press as saying basically she was over the edge and she had some issues. But at the same time, members like her very much. And we also had a bit of an altercation on the House floor. Congressman Joe Crowley and a staffer for Majority Leader Eric Cantor got into a heated argument. There were accusations back and forth. And basically that happens when people are working endless weekends and they're very tired. It was a very stressful time on Capitol Hill. I remember we had that shooting and that car chase on Capitol Hill in the middle of all this as well.
The president says, let's move on an agenda now, a bigger agenda. Here he was yesterday at the White House.
Passing a budget, immigration reform, farm bill. Those are three specific things that would make a huge difference in our economy right now. And we could get them done by the end of the year if our focus is on what's good for the American people.
Jack Beatty, can you see Congress now just moving efficiently, lickety-split, and pumping out budget deal, immigration reform, farm bill, done, done, done?
Doesn't look likely. And my gosh, what a shrunken agenda. Remember, the president began the year, a State of the Union address, calling for really a bold progressive agenda, climate change legislation, infrastructure investment, universal preschool, voting rights protection, boost to the minimum wage. Now he's talking about let's get a budget. Let's do immigration reform. Well, of course, we should do immigration reform. It's in the Republican self-interest. But we do know that self-interest is not a reliable compass with the Republicans. Their chances of botching this are very, very high indeed. And, you know, that for their long-term future could well be a bad moment for them.
Let's go to Skeeter in Huntington, Vermont. Skeeter, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call, Tom. Just to respond to Jack Beatty's earlier points about the aftermath of this big budget battle, I have to say, for the first time in my adult life, I have serious concerns for the state of our political discourse in this country. Because what we have witnessed, what all of us have witnessed, and it's something that really needs to be said, is that there is a force now out there, specifically the Tea Party, that is not willing to listen to the voices of reason. As I see it, I see the Tea Party movement as being a movement that is pretty much dominated by very rigid ideologues. And my fear is that in the wake of this budget battle, that there's now going to be a very bitter and very nasty power struggle within the Republican Party, pitting the leadership and traditional conservatives against the Tea Party. And we're already seeing this now because a number of Republican incumbents up for re-election next year are already facing Tea Party challengers.
Yeah, well, interesting this week, we saw Cory Booker in a sort of off-cycle election in New Jersey, a progressive Democrat, take that over a very hard Tea Party Senate Republican candidate. Bob Cusack, how about it? How do you see the explosive tensions we saw within the GOP in the last couple of weeks being resolved or not?
I don't think they're going to be resolved anytime soon. I mean, if you look ahead, 2014, midterm election, very important. Republicans trying to keep control of the House, trying to get control of the Senate. If Obamacare is a success, the Republican Party is in a lot of trouble. If Obamacare is a train wreck, then that would shift the dynamic and the whole repeal effort will change. But for the Tea Party campaign-wise, very good for the Republican Party. The Tea Party for governing has been a bit of a debacle for the Republican Party, and I don't see them solving it anytime soon.
Of course, calls this week, as there have been problems with the rollout of Obamacare, for the Health and Human Services Secretary in the Obama administration, Kathleen Sebelius, to resign for gross incompetence. The theme was already out there with the YouTube video coming up this week from Kansas Republican, her state, Pat Roberts, old friend of Kathleen Sebelius, saying, time to go.
Today, I am calling on Kathleen Sebelius to resign her post as Secretary of Health and Human Services. Secretary Sebelius has had 3.5 years to launch Obamacare, and she has failed.
Kristen Welker, how is that call being heard in the White House? Is her job tenuously held?
It doesn't seem that that's the case right now. And look, senior administration officials are saying that the president has complete confidence in Kathleen Sebelius. Having said that,
why?
It's
this is a debacle of a rollout. Why does he have complete confidence?
It's certainly a good question. They would point to the fact that in the past, when you've had sort of big rollouts like this, there have been glitches. They point to Medicare Part D. I think it's interesting to note that the former press secretary, Robert Gibbs, without saying that Kathleen Sebelius should go, did say some people should be fired in the wake of this. This has been sort of an unmitigated, I don't want to use the term disaster, but certainly has been fraught with problems. So it's hard to see that there won't be some fallout. And of course, the biggest problem is we keep asking the White House on a daily basis how many people have actually enrolled in the president's health care plan, and we still haven't gotten an answer. Now, they say that that is coming next month, but it's really hard to gauge whether or not anyone is getting actually access to this without those figures. So I think that's another problem. And by the day, the problems seem to be more varied. Now you have insurance companies coming forward and saying they're getting duplicate enrollment forms. So while the White House says they're on top of these problems trying to fix them, I do think there's going to be some type of fallout.
Jack Beatty, I mean, of course, things take a while to roll out, but this has been so bad at the beginning. It was her baby. She had plenty of time to prepare for it. Why wouldn't a president let go one of his cabinet members when you had so much difficulty? Why not?
You're absolutely right. We should be reading right now about the president threatening that heads are going to roll unless this is fixed instantly. Instead, he says glitches are to be expected. You know, his no-drama persona, it really could use a touch of the fierce urgency of now. FDR had it, LBJ did. You know, one of LBJ's education secretary tells of Johnson calling him night after night, sometimes past midnight, to demand, how many high schools did you integrate today? Not this month, not this week. Today, decades from now, are people going to tell anecdotes like that about Barack Obama, about his strength as a chief executive, about the fear he inspired in subordinates, about how he cleaned house at HHS after it sabotaged his singular achievement? It really seems unlikely. You know, a sentence, I was looking at the Federalist Papers about the executive authority, and a sentence from Federalist 70 really reads like a rebuke to President Obama's governing style. The sentence, a feeble executive implies a feeble execution of government.
I don't know about feeble. I mean, people blame this on federal contracting, but if heads don't roll, who's going to roll up their sleeves and fix the contracting? Wow. Susan in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Susan, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you. I was just listening to your conversation, and I'll veer here a little bit. The governor of Kentucky said that they're enrolling 1,000 people a week in Obamacare.
The state has got its own system set up, and we've heard Kentucky's doing pretty well in bringing people in. It's very interesting. What do you think broadly, more broadly, Suzanne?
More broadly, I was thinking about the Tea Party. I was 11 years old when the Japs bombed Pearl Harbor. All that means is that I've watched politicians for since FDR.
The Japanese, now our allies. But we hear you. What do you think with that perspective?
I am very worried about the Tea Party. I think they are insidious. They are evil. There is nothing good. And if I were a Republican, which I'm not, I would, well, actually, I did vote for Tom Dewey the first time around. But
that's getting back.
That's beside the point. If I were the Republicans, I would kick them out of the party.
Kick them out of the party. Good luck with that. They're pretty well dug in. But we've got it, Suzanne. We appreciate your long perspective. One more right here. Nashville. Carl, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, you're on.
Oh, thank you. Tom, first of all, I wonder if Osama bin Laden think or President Obama has been a weak president. And that's an utterly ridiculous statement in this day and time. It really is. It's right up there with the statement that was made earlier that the Republicans are going to win this argument when the proof is in the pudding that they are losing this argument. The Republican Party is going to have to deal with this baby that they created called the Tea Party. It started with Pat Buchanan and those guys with the Southern Strategy. They've teased these lunatics for years and years and years. In 2010, they accidentally got power. Now they have to deal with them. I think it's going to leave them a broken and battered, a splintered, a Southern segregationist type party. This is what they are, and to say that the president has been weak because of the way he's governed is just utterly ridiculous, utterly ridiculous.
Carl, it's a strong reading right there. We appreciate your call from Nashville. Thank you very much. We'll come back and look at that. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, South Dakota still digging out from a brutal fall blizzard and all the cattle it killed. Rancher Heath Ferguson lost almost all of his herd.
People that can actually get out to them are starting to pile them and burn them or dig pits and bury them. Where we're at, our creeks are flooding and we can't even get to them to start disposing of them.
Just a mess and sad. A Florida sheriff brings unprecedented felony charges against two girls after the cyberbullying and suicide of 12-year-old Rebecca Ann Sedgwick, who jumped to her death from an abandoned cement tower.
I saw that 12-year-old child dead at the base of that tower. And if others had the opportunity to see what I saw and see the investigation that my great detectives put together, they would insist on criminal charges as well.
And Americans tuned in huge numbers for the return of AMC's smash zombie series, The Walking Dead. 16.1 million viewers for Sunday's season 4 premiere. Watch out for the walkers.
Stay close.
There's walkers in deep!
Looking at a week in the news, shutdown drama, lessons learned or not, a medal of honor. Bob Cusack is here from The Hill. Kristen Welker from NBC News. You can join us. All kinds of response online. Such a range to it. I mean, Ted Cruz, who gave his epic speech and encouraged the whole travail we've just been through. But William says, Senator Cruz reminds me of the unknown Chinese man that stood in front of the leftist government tanks in Tiananmen Square. Sure, he knew he would lose, but he tried to make a difference. On the other hand, Barry writes to us, you know, what does he expect to come up now? He said, please join us again next January for another presentation of capricious lunatic drama here on Schadenfreude Theater. And Wes says, what have we learned? That the Tea Party is bent on ruining confidence in the federal government, and a government shutdown is just a stepping stone in that process. I want to look at these new negotiations, which are now supposed to go on over the budget. I'll come to you on that, Bob, but let's hear a little bit of the sound. Senator Patty Murray, a Democrat, and Paul Ryan, Republican, tasked to go out and lead this. Here's Patty Murray yesterday at a photo op on Capitol Hill.
Our job over the next 8 weeks is to find out what we can agree on, and we have agreed that we are going to look at everything in front of us and know that it's going to be a challenge, but we believe we can find common ground.
And here's Paul Ryan at the same event.
We want to look for ways to find common ground to get a budget agreement. Our goal is to do good for the American people, to get this debt under control, to do smart deficit reduction, and to do things that we think can grow the economy and get people back to work.
Well, not lately, but Bob Cusack, what's that horizon look like? What's the agenda on the budget talks front?
Well, a lot of Democrats are nervous about Paul Ryan heading this effort because he voted against the Bowles-Simpson. He voted against this deal that just passed Congress and was signed into law. So the base loves Paul Ryan. He's not known as a negotiator. He's viewed as very pure. The Tea Party likes him. He did vote for the fiscal cliff bill. But at the same time, now he's going to go, I think, into a new phase of his career, possibly, of trying to strike a deal. Paul Ryan also objected to go into conference with Patty Murray after the House and Senate both passed budget. So I don't think the prospects are very good. Remember, Patty Murray was also the lead Democratic negotiator on the failed super committee. So not a lot of optimism. But at the same time, there is bipartisan consensus that we're not going to have another shutdown in January. We're not going to do this debacle that just happened. So could there be a deal? Yes, but maybe it'll be a small one.
I mean, how wide is their writ, I guess, is my question here. What's the agenda? What are they supposed – how broadly, widely are they supposed to be talking? About what?
Well, they could be talking about a lot of things, whether that's the sequester. But if you look at the House passed budget and the Senate passed budget, it's strikingly different. Republicans want a revenue-neutral tax reform. Democrats want a lot of money to come to pay down the deficit. I believe it's almost $1 trillion. And Republicans say that's a non-starter. So Max Baucus, the Senate Finance Committee chairman, and Ways and Means chairman, Dave Camp, they're trying to get tax reform on the agenda, which actually is the H.R. 1, which is the coveted H.R. 1 in the House. That means it's a top priority for House Republicans. But they can't even agree whether it should be revenue neutral. So if you change the tax code, you come out all even, or whether you should take about $1 trillion and lower the deficit, which is what Democrats want. So whether it's taxes or changing Social Security or Medicare, the budgets are strikingly different, and that's why we've had no deal up until now.
Strikingly different, no deal till now. Kristen Welker, Bob Cusack says they've agreed not to go back to shutdown and default, but how do you avoid it when the gap remains so wide in the view of what to do?
Well, it's a great question. I think all sides feel as though they have to find a way to avoid it because it would just be so politically damaging to all of them. And that raises the question, what is President Obama's role going to be in these budget negotiations? We asked that question yesterday during the White House press briefing with Jake Carney. Didn't get a clear answer, but you would think that he might try to revive his so-called charm offensive, having some of the lawmakers who are going to be negotiating over here at the White House or going over to Capitol Hill to talk to them to map out his priorities. And I can tell you in a conversation that I had today, the president's willing to look at entitlement reform, things like increasing the Medicare premiums for seniors who are higher income earners, potentially requiring federal workers to contribute more to their retirements. Those are things that he has indicated he's willing to look at in the past. He said that everything is on the table. And I think that people are going to be expecting him to be engaged in this process. As we have been talking about, he was sort of in the background in this latest battle. I think a lot of people are going to want him to come to the table.
He said he will at a press conference on Wednesday. Here's the president.
I've said it before. I'll say it again. I'm willing to work with anybody. I am eager to work with anybody, Democrat or Republican, House or Senate members, on any idea that will grow our economy, create new jobs, strengthen the middle class, and get our fiscal house in order for the long term.
The president. But Jack Beatty, the president, has been very clear that, yes, he'll talk about entitlements and all the rest, but there have to be new revenues. This can't all be just on the backs of those with the least. And Republicans so far not willing to budge on that. Who's going to blink on that front, Jack?
Well, you know, I think if you could sort of posit an ideal public interest, it would be something like this. All right, the Republicans don't have to budge on taxes, but they do have to budge on the sequester. That's a $1.2 trillion reduction in discretionary spending over the next decade. That's the spending that makes a difference to everybody. Education, infrastructure, investment in science, all the rest. And that is throttled. Any relief on that would be good both for the long term, because of all its implications, and in the short term, it would put money into the economy, which we desperately need to get jobs for the unemployed, which chronically unaddressed problem. So I would hope that they could trade a substantial reform of the easing of the sequester in exchange for means testing for Medicare. Why not? You know, that would really create a problem for the Republicans. That's a big Paul Ryan stand. But if you look at polls, Tea Party people don't want that at all. They think Medicare is they're self-entitled, right? I've got my Medicare. Don't you touch it.
Mm-hmm.
And it could really create some problems there. And if that's what the Republicans want to do, fine, swap it off for sequester easement and forget about the taxes.
Bob Cusick, can you see a deal there?
I think. I get a little bit of a different take than Jack on this. I think the Republicans could go offense on means testing, because basically Republicans, they want to move it away from being the big entitlement that it is. So if you take it away for very wealthy beneficiaries, Democrats then have to defend why wealthy beneficiaries should continue to get Medicare. I think Republicans could win on that. Now, conversely, Democrats, I think, could win on eliminating the Social Security cap, which is about $113,000. That's an idea that actually was pushed by President George W. Bush. So is there common ground? Are there ideas that maybe combining Part A and Part B of Medicare, which is something that has some bipartisan support, not a lot of support among liberals, but enough in the middle that you can get a deal? Yes, but these are very controversial issues.
Kristen, eliminate the Social Security cap. That is, the wealthy would continue paying right on up through their entire income, that portion. Would that count as the new revenue the president wants? Would that thread the needle?
Well, it's something that he has talked about potentially considering in the past, so it's a possibility. But again, I think that, the expectations for what can get done have just been so scaled back. And to Jack's point, I think at the very, very least, what both sides would like to see is the sequester. That's the one thing they can agree on. But of course, the question becomes, how do they actually make that happen?
I'm not sure what Jack says. Ask the GOP to blink on the sequester, to give it up. So what's the agreement, Kristen?
Well, I think I think they both want to figure out a way to scale back the sequester.
Really? I thought Mitch McConnell was claiming that as the victory that never dies.
Well, I think Republicans don't like it because it takes a chunk out of defense spending. So that's one of the reasons that they're not 100% comfortable with it. Now, having said that, you're absolutely right. I think that they can tolerate more of these spending cuts than Democrats. But I do think that there is some room for negotiation there for that mere fact that a lot of Republicans say, look, this is taking a big bite out of defense spending as well.
Let's go to John in Houghton, Michigan. John, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
You know, I'm recalling back when the Affordable Care Act, I mean, I consider myself to be pretty independent. So
okay.
I want to say that at the beginning. When the Affordable Care Act was passed, as I recall, the Republicans felt kind of locked out from that process. And they foresaw, or it was at least their forecast, that this was going to end up to be a bad program, overrun with costs and all this stuff. So what choice do they have now but to take every means that they have? If that's really their heart, if that's their conviction, then I hear a lot of surprise that they are continuing to try to defund and chip away at Obamacare.
Yeah.
But remember, none of them voted for it.
Yeah,
what other recourse do they have now than what people are calling draconian and all these things? This is their only line towards possibly trying to change the law that they didn't support in the first place.
John, we've got it. I appreciate your call. Let us pick it up. Jack, what do you say to that?
Well, you know, we had a Tea Party Congressman Michael Burgess from Texas on the show the other night, and he was asked pretty much this, you know, how are you going to stop this? You're ready to throw the economy into the economy into default. What are you going to? And he said, well, now we're thinking, or he was thinking, Obamacare may well fall of its own weight. And to look at the rollout, I mean, everything with Obamacare depends upon getting young people to sign up, getting more and more of them to sign up. And if that doesn't happen, the death spiral with rising insurance rates will happen and the whole system will fall down. And anybody who has great confidence that the government is going to be able to motivate those people to do that simply hasn't been paying attention to this disastrous rollout. So I think the Republicans can easily say, we don't have to take draconian steps now. Let's just stand back and see how this experiment plays out.
We'll see.
Out.
That would be a test of whether they really believe it will fail. I mean, let us remember, this was modeled on Romney Care, Mitt Romney's program, you know, put up by conservatives in the first place because private insurance is still right in the middle of it. Motivation's hard to clearly suss out here, but everybody's going to be watching. Lenore in Marblehead, Massachusetts. You're on, Lenore.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I'll be brief. My point might sound idealistic, even does, and it's a shame. You asked before what would we like the Congress to do. I would like the Congress to realize that we are part of a global situation here, and we ought to be global citizens. Surely we try and teach our children that we're not only acting not in the best interest of the people in the whole country, but we're really not being aware that we are not alone in this big continent anymore. This is not the Wild West, which I often feel I'm watching in these actions. You know, we are part of a global economy that has much to do. Environment, poverty, sickness, politics. There's no time for these factions. So to answer your question, I would like the Congress, the president seems to try, to be aware and step up to the fact that we need to be global leaders, not in word only. I really don't like to hear the word all the time that we're a great country. We're only a great country if we act like one in a total way, and we're not.
Lenore, I hear all that loud and clear, and boy, am I on your page there. I mean, it just seems as though if we got our act together, there's no reason to be in this ditch. Let's get out of it. And how much of this can we take? I mean, I don't know what you think of Wall Street, but even there, you know, you've got the CEO of BlackRock, Larry Fink, saying in the last couple of days, you know, that we've just had a brush of Armageddon here. He said these debates are unacceptable. He's talking about people all over the world looking at the U.S. and its standing and its role and the trust they can put in. You know, people who buy big bunches of U.S. debt talking to him from abroad and saying, should we still do this? Saying fourth quarter results likely to come in negative for a lot of companies because of this. He says, let's hope the men and women who are responsible for this will understand that this is unacceptable. We have to move on and work in a bipartisan way to make this economy strong again. And that from the guy at the head of BlackRock. And still, I wonder, I mean, the voters in the end, they're going to have a say on this. New Jersey this week on Wednesday, Cory Booker put in and not his Tea Party opponent. How do you read that, Jack? Chris Christie did everything he could to make a date that wasn't part of a big election in New Jersey, and still New Jersey Republican Steve Lonergan, Tea Partier, didn't make it in. Cory Booker did. What's the reading there?
Well, I actually think that I'm a little surprised. I thought Cory Booker was going to do much better. And you know, just a couple of months ago, it had him up by, over, I think Bob can confirm this, over 20 points. And he only won by what, 10 or 11?
10, yeah.
Now, of course, it's an off-year election. It was an election on a Wednesday and all the rest of it. But it wasn't the huge 20-point blowout that I think we're going to see from Governor Christie in his reelection bid just in a few weeks.
Bob, what's the first sign you're going to look for post our brush with Armageddon about whether things are really different on Capitol Hill or not in the weeks ahead?
Well, I think we've seen it to some degree already that with Mitch McConnell saying we're not going to fight over Obamacare, I think that's going to be echoed by House Republican leaders, and that fight is going to be put in basically in the past. And I think history will show that this was a historically stupid fight.
Well, gosh, when it's all over, that's what we have to look at. Great. Let's hope that we do not do all this again, that we move ahead one way or the other for the better. Bob Cusack with The Hill, it's always great to have you with us. Thank you very much for joining us today, Bob.
Thank you.
Kristen Welker at the White House, good luck with your coverage there. I hope you get a few more winks in the days ahead. Thank you for joining us today, Kristen.
Thanks so much, Tom. I enjoyed it.
And Jack? How about this great nation of ours? Lenore says, prove it.
Oh, my gosh. What a week.
Lenore's right. Let's prove it. Great to have you with us, Jack. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
On Monday, we're going to get out of all this. We're going to look at the new global population debate, how many humans this planet can, will, should support. Join us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.